There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, live local talk over the hour, and phone number, text line 343-0106, and congratulations to Rhonda Tillman and Theodore. Won our first set of Win 'Em Before You Can Buy 'Em tickets for Def Leppard and ZZ Top at the Wharf Amphitheater. Show coming up September 28th. Tickets go on sale this Friday, 10 a.m., Ticketmaster.com and the Wharf box office. It is great to have my friend Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper in this hour, because there's, we had planned this before we got all the additional rain over the weekend, but I know there's a lot of stuff we want to talk about. One of the things, though, that's on my mind is something we've talked about in the past and has been discussed, of course, by you and Baykeeper, and that's the coal ash that's stored there at Berry Steam Plant. First of all, how are you? Welcome
I'm
back.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's been too long.
Yes, absolutely. So it's good to get you back in here, and lots to talk about with Mobile Baykeeper. And first of all, people who are not familiar, just moved here, been under a rock, whatever it is, what is Mobile Baykeeper?
We are your environmental advocacy organization. We work for clean water, clean air, and healthy communities, and we do it by being the environmental watchdog. But we also really do our research on our issues. Before we talk about them, we're going to make sure we know what we're talking about. And then we're the weirdos who work with strangers, people you wouldn't expect, because we all have that common goal of clean water. We'll work with industry, we'll work with other environmental organizations, politicians, state agencies, right wing, left wing, we don't care. We embrace everybody who loves clean water.
Yeah, to me, that's been, and even the moderate people in between.
Oh, yeah, we love them too.
that this is my warpath like yours on clean water for a long time, you even beyond me, I said this is a nonpartisan issue, not even a bipartisan. To me, it's a nonpartisan issue. I still am left scratching my head when it comes to why you wouldn't think everybody would be behind getting clean water. I mean, that's what makes us great here.
Well, it's also the basis of our economy, and mm-hmm. I think that's a big piece that people forget. And the challenge is that we don't like regulations. I don't like regulations. I don't like rules. I assure you, my 12-year-old does not like rules. But in order for us to really take care of our natural resources, because they don't have a defender, we have to have rules. And they don't need to be egregious. They don't need to be silly. They need to be tested. They need to be proven. But those rules are the only thing between us and getting our neighbors dumping on us and polluting us and not having a healthy and thriving economy. Every community you see across the nation where there is a healthy environment, there is a thriving economy. We saw it during the oil disaster, which is coming up on a 10-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. When we had a $1 billion hit from losing our beach for one summer. Yep. That's huge.
It is massive. I would say that would be, and I want to get into some of what's happened with that, with the BP settlement with you as well, but that I see that as acute. Even at that point, we didn't know if it, and there's a chance it can be chronic and long term, but at least in the news cycle and people's attention, shutting down mm-hmm. the beach, those things, it was acute. Then there's another kind of, and I'm thinking about water pollution. I know there's air in the mix as well, obviously, but there's a chronic water pollution. And it may not get the headlines that something acute like the oil spill does, but I watch those as well. Just it's the same story month after month, year after year. It's cumulative out
pervasive.
There. Pervasive.
Yeah. Sewage is a pervasive problem that you have to constantly invest in upgrading your sewage treatment facilities and the capacity and the lines and those joints and the lines under the street that no God bless us, our politicians don't like to fund because we can't see it. I get it.
It's not sexy to go, there's no big ribbon cutting.
Right?
There's no big, out with the hard hats and the chrome shovels and all that.
I think we got to figure out how to get hard hats and chrome shovels and ribbons to cut for sewage treatment lines, because honestly, that is what we are so dependent upon. 2018 was one of the hardest years. 2017 was our big sewage spill year, almost 27 million gallons. 2018 was a dramatic decrease, but because of 2017, the nation was seeing all these increases in sewage spills. And then U.S. News & World Report ends up posting Fairhope Beach as the worst in Alabama. And it's not terrible. It's a beautiful place to be. And by comparison, the number of beach closures had dropped dramatically from 17. But thank the good Lord, 2019 was a significantly better year. That all is happening, though, because we are calling people out. We, community-wise, not Baykeeper, but all of us are saying sewage in our waterways is not acceptable. I want to swim. I want to fish. I want to play. My work depends on clean water. Everybody's does. So we're doing a better job of saying Mobile Water and Sewer Service, Daphne Utilities, whoever it is, do a better job. And thankfully, they're listening.
That's good. That's good, because it's not only, an issue, because it's an issue that can be solved. You're showing that you can make strides on this, because there are some issues. People go, what are you ever going to do?
Right.
This is something that
you can fix.
You can do.
Yeah.
So that's one issue in dealing with sewage going forward. I know there's some infrastructure work that's newly launched or getting with Moss.
Yes.
Doing that. Hopefully people will support this. And if politicians do say, hey, I'm pushing them to do this, you can support those politicians because they have it. It's not the most exciting thing for the politicians to talk about. I think they think that, or their campaign managers tell them. But for folks like me, I'm a regular South Alabama person. You and I have known each other a long time. It's a big deal to us and our families.
Absolutely. I mean, both of our children have grown up on the water and my kid has grown up understanding what stormwater is. And he told me he got an orange juice at school the other day. And I said, you got what? What's the packaging? I mean, he's like, it's okay. It's in a box.
it's a little more stringent at your house. But at the same time, I've developed hopefully my children. I know one of them recited some stuff to me recently. That it's easy to deal with the things we can see.
Right.
Okay. And those things, not easy, but it's something you can see, you can pick up. My daughter is very worried about the plastic straws.
Right.
And I said, that's a thing. That's a visual cue. But what worries me, Casey, is the stuff we can't see.
Right. That's like what mercury.
Worries me. Yes.
I mean, remember when we talked about that 20 years ago?
Yes.
And mercury was always such an interesting issue because people would say, there was nobody died from mercury.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we had all of these tests where especially big game fishermen are getting their mercury levels tested and they're coming up through the roof because they eat those larger fish more frequently, more regularly. Come to find out, we all know mercury is not great for a pregnant woman. It impacts our fetus. It impacts, the babies and brains and brain development. But we also found out then that it impacts middle age, now my age, men in particular with heart and cardiovascular issues. That's huge. But there was no smoking gun.
You couldn't point to somebody die
from mercury pollution.
Right.
So we haven't really addressed it. We also do a whole lot of it's China's fault when we're producing it right here in Sweet Home and not addressing our own concerns.
Well, listen, when it comes to global things that I'll sit here and point some fingers at China, but when it's things in our own backyard, we're responsible for them. And now the technology's out to know what's going on there. Actually, technology makes keeping things cleaner easier, at least from where I stand.
It does. It does. Now, I love Pete Barber, who's a big, South Mobile County Bayou fisherman. He said to me one day, mercury, the problem with mercury is our microscopes are better. We've always had mercury. And he's right to a degree.
Okay, yeah.
But that same on the opposite side is there. Our filters are better, too.
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to capture mercury or not let it go up in our stacks or come out in our waterways absolutely exists. You can filter out more things than ever before. It's about making that consistent investment, consistently upgrading your facilities, consistently staying in line with the latest and best technologies. That's A. Well, that's B. Because A, in all honesty, is you gotta commit to it. Mm-hmm. You've got to be willing to spend that extra money. You've got to have a focus on, I believe, in clean water for families, for my own children, for my future generations.
It can be self-serving. It can be as self-serving or as altruistic as you want it.
Absolutely.
You know, and so listen, we're coming back. We're talking more about water. And a couple different parts of it. I'm on this chronic acute thing, and maybe we can talk more about the acute issues, too. One of them I talked about this morning, the Barry Stam plant reading of the Mobile River is projected at 16 feet. Of course, we've talked about the coal ash that's stored there at Barry Stam plant. I want to find out more of Baykeeper's angle on this when we come back. Take your calls and texts as well at 343-0106. Be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Good to have my friend Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper in studio. It's been too long, and there is lots to talk about, and we can talk more about sewage and those issues. There's the utilities, and then there's also septic tanks in this mix as well. So we'll talk about that some more. But I do want to get to this. The coal ash discussion has been one that is, what, at least in my world, 2 years? What?
Five for us.
Five for but in regular folks.
Regular folks, I would say. We started talking this maybe 3 years ago publicly. But it really started in 2008 when the Kingston, Tennessee dam failed. The coal ash pond dam failed. That was about about 90 acre site, about 1 million tons of coal ash that destroyed a community, a small, low, slow flowing river, and had, at the 10-year mark, there was at least $1 billion in cleanup costs associated. Now there are all sorts of lawsuits in addition associated with the cleanup, which were just abysmal. They had workers who died from health impacts from coal ash. So coal ash is not a regulated toxic, it is not a regulated defined hazardous waste. But every component of coal ash is. So arsenic, mercury, lead, cadmium, boron, you name it, it's all in coal ash.
Okay, let me hit rewind here, and yes, we'll go to 101. Coal ash is what? How do we get coal ash?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Coal ash is when you burn anything, there is always ash left over.
Sure.
So when you burn coal, there is ash. And in the 50s, when they built Barry Stam plant up, you know, in Bucks, Alabama, on the side of the river near Nobody, because you don't want to have a power plant in the middle of people.
Right.
They burned the coal, and then they kind of shoveled the ash out of the back door, washed it out with a hose.
So this is like when we have a fire in the fireplace, yep, and we have ash there.
And it's, you know, so you can feel it in your hands, mm-hmm, if it gets wet. It is really, really fine. Mm-hmm. If it's dry, it blows in the wind. Mm-hmm. So instead of having it dry blowing in the wind, they wet it down and they store it in a pond. Over time, that
pond, there's water in that pond and then there's ash in that pond.
Right. When it started, it was wetland. Then they just kind of dumped it out of the side. Over time, they started adding walls to that pond to build it up and to keep it internal and keep it protected.
So a levee system around it.
Exactly. So I've hit on two of the three things that worry me right there.
Okay.
Number one, you built this thing in a wetland. There's no liner underneath it. There's nothing between groundwater and the bottom of that coal ash pond. In fact, we understand from Alabama Power's information that the bottom of the coal ash pond, the groundwater is higher than the bottom of the coal ash pond. This is where you need video because my hands are all up in
there. I'm following you though. So the normal water table,
yes,
outside the levee is higher than the depth of the coal ash pond.
Yes, inside the levee too. It's all the groundwater. It's inside that levee. The groundwater is higher than the bottom of the coal ash pond.
So
it's
what you're getting at is the levee is containing the physical movement of the coal ash across the landscape.
Exactly.
But the groundwater and the water in that pond are joined in the dirt.
And when Alabama Power was required to start monitoring it and sharing the information, sharing those results with the public, that was exactly what they found. 800% higher levels of groundwater contamination for arsenic than the legal limits. So we know that Alabama Power at Plant Barry is currently in the groundwater. That groundwater is moving and then seeping into the Mobile River ultimately and then causing everybody problems. It's a fast-moving river. There's a whole lot of water, so it's really hard to say.
Dilution is the solution. Dilution is the solution to pollution, somebody
would
say. But
there is no amount of arsenic that's okay, and arsenic does not ever go away. It's a heavy metal. So same with mercury, same with all these other, you know, heavy metals and toxins that are in there. The second thing is that dam, though. The dam itself was built up over time. It was built with mud and clay, and then subsequent additions to it were built with coal ash. So it's...
Wait a second. Because as the pile of coal ash increases, you got to raise the level of the levee, right, or the dam around it.
Exactly.
And they use coal ash to...
build the pond, yeah.
Okay, build the walls.
So
there.
To build
okay.
the walls, exactly. It is not a... It's not a... well, Alabama doesn't have really, well, rules, period, on dams or dam safety. So we have...
Hold on, I don't know. Try to build a fishing pond in Mobile County and see what happens.
But well, I wish those same rules applied at Alabama Power. Yeah. That would be important.
Right.
And, you know, again, I do not want to poke Alabama Power entirely in the eyeball on this. They're a good company that has done good work, and they've been committed to good environmental work all of our long, long, long history. Certainly great community work, I would say. And this is one that we're finding them come up short, and we want to fix that.
Okay, Casey, tell folks, what with this, now it's sitting there, and I mentioned this about the Mobile River.
Yes.
Okay, and because there's two things. We're back to the acute and chronic.
Mm-hmm.
So the chronic is this leaching into the water table,
right.
Groundwater seeping
into
the river, and also probably aquifers that may go... other areas, I don't know.
Absolutely.
But then the acute would be what happens if we have a breach of the wall, the river is high, gets in there somehow. I don't know if it can. If it's high enough to do that. I mean, I've spent some time along those levees up and down the Mobile River trying to picture how high it would have to get if you had a breach to get in there.
So these are numbers I should keep in my brain perfectly, and I'm going to get it wrong, but you can go to mobilebaykeeper.org/coal ash and see the exact numbers. Because the third thing, so number, you've got existing groundwater contamination.
Mm-hmm.
You have a dam that is not necessarily built to last forever.
Okay.
And then the third thing is location. Coastal community, high velocity flood zone area, and in a place where we've got river rises. And, you know, being at the bottom of that river, it's not just whether or not it rains here locally. Did we have a 100-year flood event that rained just at Plant Berry? But we have a 100-year flood event that rains in Montgomery, and we can see all of that weather, all of that water coming straight down to us because we're at the bottom of the watershed.
You look at the Great Seal of the State of Alabama, and you could look at obviously Alabama and the Tom Bigby come together and make the Mobile River.
Some of the early stuff that we did. Mobile Baykeeper spent 2 years doing research on this, and then meeting with Alabama Power. Before we made anything public, before we involved the first outside communication.
Right.
One of the things that we got funding to do, hire a dam safety expert. That's DAM, safety expert. I'm not going to get in radio trouble.
She's known me long enough to know Sean will giggle with that one.
But it's, the expert reviewed all existing data.
Okay.
Now, we did not get permission from Alabama Power for them to take a core sample or anything along those lines. So it's a literature review. You know, we toured the outside of the site. We have flight overviews. So we've got, and if you go to our website, you've got a ton of great pictures. So you really get a good picture of what's going on there. But we flew over the site. We've got a lot of information about what it looks like. And according to all of the data that's there, our expert found that the worst case scenario, essentially, high velocity flood zone, category 3 flood event, storm event, and you are going to be within an inch margin of a breach. If you had a breach, there was nothing, that did not include a stick getting caught in the outfall line. So any small anomaly would overtop that dam if you had a 100-year flood event. We have had 3 100-year flood events in the last 7 years in our coastal area. That's the kind of thing that we've seen those Well, and by the way, for regular people, a 100-year flood event is a flood that happens once every 100 years,
thereabouts,
not three times in 7 years.
Right. And so you're saying, so the danger more like a situation like happened in Louisiana around Baton Rouge and Zachary or Houston like that?
Houston, North Carolina with their storms.
Yeah.
I mean, and I want to say the North Carolina storms around the Cape Fear area, the Hurricane Matthew, I'm not going to get the numbers right, but if Hurricane Matthew was at 20 feet, Hurricane Florence was at 30 feet or 28 feet. It was a whole, I'm getting the numbers wrong, but it was another 3 to 5 feet higher than the storm before.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk more about this and what you would like to see done with that coal ash when we return right here on Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. By the way, parades start again tonight, 6:30. And Dr. Bill says it's not the best week, rain-wise, for the parades. Wednesday is the rain day. You may be shifting quite a few parades to Wednesday, although it looks like there's a chance of rain on Wednesday. So I don't know about that. All right, continue our conversation with Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper, talking about a bunch of different things, but one that really is standing out to a lot of people in this discussion of coal ash and the coal ash storage there at Berry Steam Plant. What are people asking Alabama Power to do? What would you like to see happen?
We want to see them dig up the coal ash and move it to an upland-lined landfill, a modern landfill, away from the side of the river.
Away from the
water. Yeah, absolutely. They're in the 100-year flood zone. They're in a coastal area. We can find a landfill that is safe, that is nearby. Alabama Power can probably, on their own land or land they acquire, permit and build a new landfill that is modern and can be sealed and close the coal ash up forever.
So take the coal ash and take it there.
Yeah. That's what's happening in other states around the Southeast especially. That's the other reason we're really disappointed in Alabama being last on this. We're supposed to be first. We're number one. Mm-hmm. Virginia passed a bill, a bipartisan bill. It was still when the Republicans were leading the House and the Senate and the governorship in Virginia. They passed a law that said, dig up all coal ash, move it to upland line landfills. No capping in place. North Carolina has done it now. South Carolina has done it. Each one of those three states did it either with their Department of Environmental Management or Quality, their state agencies, and they just said, dig it up and move it. South Carolina was easy as pie. They didn't, no fights, no nothing. Then the other one that is really relevant is Georgia Power. Georgia Power decided to dig up and move all the coal ash from all of their coastal areas. They just, without a question, 19 of 26, they are digging up those coal ash ponds and moving everything away from the sides of the river into upland and into lined landfills. Alabama Power is proposing to leave them all where they are, to consolidate the footprint a little bit, and to put a really nice cap on top of it.
Okay.
There is still nothing underneath. There's still no new something being put under that land, under that coal ash, between the groundwater and the ground. The one facility they've closed that way is up in Gadsden, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And within a year, the groundwater monitoring showed high levels of contamination.
Because there's two worries back to this. It's the acute event of a breach or something like that.
Right.
But you could maybe argue that you could cap that and keep that from happening under layers of dirt or something. But
yeah, but the capped in place facilities in North Carolina failed too. They were not as good as this proposal, but a major storm event could still erode the sides and the bottom and cause another impact. So we still do not see put capping in place on the side of the river being a smart play.
All right, grab some calls here too at 343-0106. Mike is in Mobile. Mike, you're on with Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good.
Hey, man. You know, I just want to say, and I'm going to make this short, I'm not going to get in an argument with anybody, but I've worked at Alabama Power at Barry's Steam Plant off and on for the last 25 years. And I can tell you that the statement that she made about there not being liners in these ponds, it's not true. I have physically installed these liners.
Okay, then now explain to me, like the liner, and Casey's here with it. Yeah. The liners, is it like I'm picturing you'd put in the bottom of, like, plastic liner or something in the bottom of a pond?
No, it's not plastic. It is a very, you know, durable liner. And while installing these liners, if there is a nick or a scratch of any kind, of any sort, you have to stop immediately what you're doing and change it out. You got to fix it. You got to stop.
Mike.
And like I said, I know for a fact that they have taken, and especially in the last 20 years, you know, Alabama Power has taken so many precautions to, you know, to clean up and to fix it and to make it better. And that's all I've got to say.
All right, Mike.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate the call and the information. I think we might not be talking about the same thing. The coal ash pond is 600 acres, 597 acres, and it is not lined according to any of Alabama Power's documentation.
Mike, are we talking about the same pond?
I know there's a new...
Yes, we are. It's just not true. That's not true, Sean.
Well,
it's just not true.
I think we're going to... I would love to compare some documentation with you.
I appreciate all you do. I listen every day. And I always will.
All right.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. Well, this is something, I mean, if that is, you think if that was true, that
Alabama Power
would
report
that.
It. Yeah, I think we must be talking about something different, unfortunately.
Mike's talking about a liner, though, so that's...
There is not a 600-acre-sized liner underneath the coal ash pond at Plant Berry. If there was, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And the data that we are gathering is not data we made up. The only information that's available is from Alabama Power.
Okay.
If they had, and it's all on our website, not just our data. Again, we did about a 300-page report, which is more significant than we've ever done in a report before. But all of it has the links from the data that we collected, which is from Alabama Power.
So in the information coming from Alabama Power,
they do not have a liner.
They say we don't have a liner, or they don't mention a liner, or
no,
what?
They say that they believe there is a natural clay barrier that would suffice. So they've also, and the National Estuary Program and some other folks have hired, and we've also got an expert who's reviewing the geology of the site to help determine what the natural clay layer is that exists that may or may not be a quote. I'm not a geologist, philosophy major, but there is a completely contained or an isolated barrier in a clay structure.
Mm-hmm.
So if, depending upon what those layers look like in the ground, from a geological formation perspective. So there's a supposition that there's a clay liner in the mix that is, that Alabama Power might be able to build a retaining wall down into.
Okay.
Around the outside of it, which then might keep it from ever being breached. We have a lot of doubt about that. So do the geologists that we've heard.
Well, I just wonder, too, as we look at this from a cost side,
how
when we start talking about those things, does anybody have a number on what it costs to dig this up? You said other states are doing it, other places. Yeah. What's it cost to dig it up, put it in trucks, take it to an upland site?
It's expensive. It's expensive to do it, and that's for sure. So it's expensive to cap it in place. It's expensive to dig it up and move it. It's more expensive to dig it up and move it.
How much more? You know what I'm saying?
It's hard because one thing Alabama Power and Baykeeper will agree on all day long is every site is different. And so you have to look at what's there and what is there. What does that site look like? What are the distances you'd have to travel to get to a landfill? What is the acreage versus the tonnage contained? So we have a 600-ton site and 22 million tons of coal ash in it. You got a 200-acre site over here with only 20 million tons. That's easier in some cases. So it's just different. Every site's different.
Hey, Tim, can you hold on? We got Tim can help clarifying these pond liners. We'll do this when we return. Tim, hold on. We'll come to you first at 343-0106. Continue our discussion. Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 146 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Good to have my friend Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper in. And I want to run to a call here before we get in the next set of questions. Because Bama Tim, which I don't hear from Bama Tim enough anymore, he's calling in from Saraland. And you can help us understand this pond liner question?
Yes, I think they built a new pond about 8 or 9 years ago. And yes, it is lined. It's a system of ponds that has liners in it. And I think that's probably what the other caller was talking about, Mike. The big ash pond, I personally have inspected that pond and walked around it. I used to monitor it myself when I worked up there. I do not, to my knowledge, know that that pond is or is not lined. I'm almost sure it is not.
In the break, I said to Sean, because the law in 2015 required them, all coal-burning power plants can no longer store coal ash wet, so everybody had to build new containment that was dry. And I know for a fact we saw it get put in, that they put a liner under that dry stored coal ash, and probably some of the other wet materials that they are having to store would be some other kind of stormwater retention ponds. Do not get me wrong, I don't believe Alabama Power has been breaking any rules. It was not a rule that you have a liner under your coal ash pond in 1953 when the thing was built. So Alabama Power is bad.
I
want
to say that Alabama Power does not break rules. I will say they will bend them to the point where they'd be squeaking real loud.
that was our worry with the dam. When the dam safety expert, every time I say it, I laugh myself. So, but he really said, I mean, how it came in is you're in such a fine line of any kind of an accident, and we could have that acute problem. We could have a breach. And the thing you have to think about, if the dam were to break, what that would do. So the BP oil disaster, you know, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of that. And all that was water coming, or would have been oil coming into Mobile Bay. But because we have such a fast-moving river and the tides are right, and, you know, we didn't have a ton of oil inside Mobile Bay.
Right.
But if there was a breach at Alabama Power, every bit of a breach would end up in Mobile Bay, up and down our rivers. And can you even imagine trying to clean up those fine, fine, fine sediments and all that heavy metal? We got to do better. And I believe we got to demand better.
Hey, Tim, I appreciate the call. Good
Definitely.
Hearing from
Thank
you. I want to get to that, because this is, you mentioned earlier in the show, if people didn't catch it, there is an example, Kingston, Tennessee.
Yes.
This is the one that, this is when this hit, got my attention on this, because this is not what could happen. This did happen.
And Dan River, there have been two or three pretty significant breaches of coal ash dams now, but Kingston, Tennessee, 2008, it was right at Christmas, and it was something that none of us could have possibly imagined. And our delta and where Barry is different, but in that area, it's a slow-moving river, and the dam, when the dam broke, the coal ash went in all four directions, but it covered up a house up to its second story. There was so much coal ash behind that, and it was 1 million tons, not 22 million tons. We have such a massive facility and such a massive site that somebody asked me at one point, well, what if they dug up half of it and moved half of it or some portion? What could you settle for? And that's one of the hardest questions I think I've ever been asked, because, you know, how do you compromise on that? And, you know, we see the BP oil, this coal ash pond is 20 times the volume of the BP oil disaster. And it's inside the Mobile River. And it would come down the Mobile Bay.
It's not inside the Mobile River now.
Alongside the Mobile River. Thank you.
Right. I want to run through this because this is a good question. So Jason's asking, this is the kind of stuff we do here. Jason says, well, who pays the salary for Mrs. Callaway and Mobile Baykeeper? How are they funded?
We get three kind of big sources of funding. Number one, we do get grants. So we have foundation and a few federal grants to do some specific projects. We have membership, which is vitally important. If you are not a member, you should be. Go online, mobilebaykeeper.org. And then we also host events. Bay Bites is coming up in March, and it's a super fun food truck festival, and we do lots of different events throughout the year. Our financials are $9.90. Everything is on our website, so we're real transparent with how we do our money. We get audited every single year. Which is always so much fun, but it's really good information. So if you want to know anything about our stuff, it's right there on the website.
Well, I'm glad to get to ask Jason's question because people wonder about that. And I've known you in the organization for a long time, but
yep. No,
not everybody.
Please, it gives me an opportunity to ask you to join.
There you go. All right. This question is about the flood events. So Texter said, if we've had 3 100-year flood events in 7 years without a breach, what's the complaint?
Those are down here. I'm sorry. Those are just in the local area. So you probably remember the two in a row in Baldwin County and one of which...
The Big Fish River flood.
We had the one that did the giant sinkhole at McGregor and Dauphin Street. And then there was another one, but I can't remember the date of that one, but we had three major 100-year flood events in those areas. We have not had higher than 16 to 17 feet at the Barry Steam Plant area. But again, on our website, we've got pictures. We were able to fly both of those events. One was December of 16, and one I want to say was January of either 18 or 19.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm a nerd on this stuff for river stages. So we are, if the current projected crest stays where it is without being adjusted, you know, up or down, it will be the eighth highest. I think it'll replace the eighth highest flood event. Last year was 14 and change, but this year already projected at 16. I know that you have to get to number 5 on the list here before you get to 17 feet, and that's 1980. And the highest crest was 18.19, is at least according to the NOAA and the Advanced Hydrological Prediction Service. Some of us that have places along the river live by this time of year. We all study this every morning. See, 18.19 feet in March of 61. But you're looking at a situation where that's 16. I don't know how much higher it goes. I'm sure somebody on TV news tonight will say it's unprecedented. It's not unprecedented, but it's not very common to get 16 feet of Barry Steam Plant. It's just not.
And we've been getting this is the time of the year when it happens.
We have more floods. It's more, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years have been really wet on the river.
And the big challenge is that what the rules say, the rule that says you have to close your coal ash pond, the length of time that you have to monitor that coal ash pond is 30 years. So now in 30 years, I'll be the ripe old age of 80. I just turned 50.
Happy birthday.
I know, I'm celebrating still. But I'll be 80, but my kid won't be. And so are we going to stop monitoring it then? So even if you think about projected costs, you have to think about permanent closure. And permanent closure is digging up the coal ash and moving it off the side of our river. It's a little bit more expensive. It takes time. All of the things that are important to look at and important for us to consider. But I do believe Alabama Power has had its second or third or fourth record profit year. They're spending 3 times more money on lobbying than its nearest neighbor, at 3.5 times more. Let's, instead of spending all that money on lobbying politicians, let's spend the money on doing the right thing. Let's dig it up and move it. Let's do the right thing for our community for the long term.
Yeah, it's one of those that is not, it's just like we started when we talked about sewer and those things. There's no big ribbon cutting, right? There's no chrome shovel event for that.
I will host it. I assure you, I will host it for them.
And if Alabama Power moved all this coal ash, dump trucks, or whatever you do, and took it to an upland site, lined facility, put it there and capped it, cleaned up, you know, where were those, that'd be good.
Ecstatic, yes. And frankly, you know, North Carolina is the last state that's just made this big decision. And North Carolina did it because they lost the last of the lawsuits. We don't have to do that in Alabama. You know, we build and create relationships here. We have great people who work at Alabama Power. Bend the rules or abide by them strictly, I'm not going to weigh in on that. But essentially, we've got people who, you know, after the storm, who's the happiest person we want to see pull up in our front yard? So we've got, and they're always investing in the community. This is schools, educations. What are they sponsoring this week? I mean, great events, great people, great support. Let's do the right thing here. Alabama Power can and should, and we believe they ultimately will. I just don't want to do it with a fight. We want to do it with friendship.
What do members of local delegation to Montgomery, do they seem to be hearing you?
Not thoroughly. I think it's hard. It's a difficult issue.
It is.
So we'll talk to people about how many dump trucks it takes, and somebody just told us recently that it would be enough dump trucks to loop the earth three times. And then we did the math of how much and how many. It's a million dump trucks. 150 going in and out of the plant a day is 300 dump trucks a day in and out, or 300 new truck trips on Highway 90. Highway 90. 43. Yes.
43.
Goodness gracious. And I get in all these numbers, I'll get all crazy. But all this information is right there. It would be enough dump trucks, we think, to go from Alaska to Key West, but not loop the earth three times.
It's going to be a lot of dump trucks.
It's going to be a lot of dump trucks.
All right.
But you can do it right. It can be done right. Other states are doing it right. We can, too, in Alabama.
We're going to have to talk about this going forward. Also, get you back in as we approach 10 years since the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Remind folks the website.
MobileBaykeeper.org.
All right. Get more information over there. If they've got questions, a way they can contact,
email us
specifically.
Everything's there. Yep. Me and Cade Kissler, program director. Questions about membership, anything you want, Callaway@MobileBaykeeper.org. I'd love to hear from you.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Heading out. I'll be back tomorrow morning bright and early for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum show on the way. Remember, podcast of this show and the 40-plus hours a week of live local programming we do around here are waiting for you online, front page of FMTalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcasts. They're right there. Plus, we dig it. We'd like it if you would subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher. You could do that also at Deezer now, Spotify. TuneIn Radio's got our podcast. They're all over the place. Go ahead and sign up and get those downloads today. And we'll see you mañana. Have a great one.